Her decision finding Apple liable in the ebook price-fixing case came swiftly and firmly enough, but Judge Denise Cote has recently shown Cupertino some measure of mercy. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and its podcast series. My name is Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Also feeling the love this week are ebook consumers who stand to benefit from generous settlements in the same case. They see signs that Santa Claus may be on his way this year. Joining me with the full story is a regular visitor to Judge Cote's courtroom and our weekly guest, Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, you know, we were off last week for the Labor Day holiday, but of course the news doesn't stop, and that's the business we're in. So we've been following this story of the Apple price fixing case. It's certainly the biggest story of the year in publishing so far, and never a dull moment.
Yeah, of course. As soon as we decide to take a week off, there's some fairly big developments in that case. So when last we spoke, Apple was headed for a hearing before Judge Cote to decide the contours of a final injunction after being found liable in its ebook price fixing trial. Well, for Apple, they finally got some good news. At that hearing, and this is all on the PW website if people want to read more about it, the judge revealed that her final order was going to spare Apple on what she considered to be the most contentious issues, contentious remedies, I should say, proposed by the DOJ. First, that final injunction is not going to seek to regulate any of Apple's activities in the App Store. And second, Judge Cote said she would employ only a scaled-back version of an external monitor for Apple. Now, an external monitor can be quite a cumbersome exercise. Generally, they can oversee all aspects of a company's business, and that can make things, well, difficult, you know, especially for a company like Apple, which tends to move quickly and often with groundbreaking products and groundbreaking deals. But in this case, the judge is going to limit that monitor to overseeing Apple's antitrust education in-house. That's not too bad at all. And the DOJ had initially requested 10 years of monitoring. They got only two. In addition, the judge also killed a provision in the proposed injunction that for 2 years would have allowed ebook retailers to directly link to their own bookstores for in-app purchases without paying a 30% commission to Apple. The DOJ said that provision was going to help reset competition, but Judge Cote said the provision was not really going to do anything because it was going to expire in 2 years, so, you know, it's not quite necessary. She struck it. So all in all, the judge showed a lot of restraint towards Apple. She said that she wanted her injunction to rest as lightly as possible on Apple's business while restoring competition to the ebook world. So she ordered the parties to submit a new version of the order along the lines that she suggested, and that she was hoping to sign it this week. So we know that the order has been submitted. Unfortunately, it's not public, so we don't know what the final language is going to say. But sometime either today or by Monday, we're probably going to see a final injunction issued in the Apple case, and we'll get a closer look at how the end game is playing out for the publishing trial of the century, shall we say, in Monday's issue. And one more thing I should mention, she also ordered the states and the consumer classes to have another session of settlement talks mediated by one of her colleagues, Judge Kimball Wood.
Well, you just raised an issue there that just shows how much this case has got layers and ripples throughout the industry and throughout the country. So the state and consumer classes, that's where the money is coming from, and there have been developments there as well with those publisher settlements. Tell us where things stand.
Yeah, indeed. There was some good news for consumers this week, as the projected rebates from the publisher's ebook settlements are going to more than double. That's because a new plan of distribution has been submitted to the court that's going to combine the $93 million from the most recent Macmillan and Penguin settlements with the $69 million from the first publisher settlements into one fund. And with that, the states now estimate that consumers are going to get $3.06 per ebook for New York Times bestsellers they purchased during the settlement period. That's up from $1.32, and they're going to get 73 cents for the non-bestsellers. That's up from 30 cents. And those amounts could still rise even more. They're not yet finalized and could be adjusted further once we see how all the final numbers shake out. So a new round of notices went out this week, and consumers may know that they've gotten a new email from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, maybe all of them. But here are a few things also to keep in mind. First, the date October 21. That's the new date to request that your refund comes as a check. Now, the deadline had previously passed for getting a check, but with this new combined settlement fund, you kind of get a do-over. So if you decided now that you know you maybe you've got a little more money in there that you actually want to get a check and you want to take that money and go buy a book in an independent bookstore, you can actually do that now. You just have to make that submission by October 21st. Otherwise, you don't have to do anything, and the rebates are just going to flow into your account once the settlements are approved. And that brings up the second date to keep in mind, which is December 6th. That's the date that the court is going to hold a final approval hearing here in Manhattan. You know, so if you've got something to say on the settlement, you can come sign up and you can speak at that hearing. But I'll say this, no one came to speak at the last hearing. And the first publisher settlements, the first three publisher settlements were approved right then and there at the hearing from the bench. She signed the order, boom, done. But here's the question I have now. If Judge Coe, like she did last time, does sign off on the deal from the bench, how quickly will those settlement funds be distributed? It's a question I'm looking into for Monday's issue. You know, if it can be done immediately, that's about $166 million worth of ebook credits that are going to be pumped right into the holiday book buying season. So, like I said, we'll have more on that on Monday's issue as well.
Well, we will look for that, of course, Andrew, but I love that little hint you dropped there. You could take the money and go spend it in an independent bookstore. So it doesn't have to go to Amazon after all.
That's right.
Indeed. Well, like another old friend, the Apple case is one of those. We've got others in court, the Authors Guild and Google, of course, and that case has made a return to the headlines. It's now on a really quick schedule. What's happening there?
Yeah, so when it rains in federal court, it tends to pour, and it's now pouring. So after a year-long delay, the long-running Authors Guild versus Google case is heating up again with opposition to summary judgment briefs filed last week. So you'll remember, or maybe you won't remember, it's been a year now, that you know cross motions for summary judgment in this epic copyright battle were filed in July of 2012. But just weeks after that, Judge Teddy Chin granted a stay in the case pending Google's appeal of his decision to grant the Authors Guild class action status. You know, Google prevailed on that appeal last month. Class action status was actually remanded to the court. And the Second Circuit has now ordered that the court sort out the fair use issues before it takes on class certification. And that's where we're at now, with the fair use issue now front and center. So, you know, a few observations on that case. After a year, you know, off, it's now back on the front burner. And a lot has changed in that year. In October of last year, the publishers dropped their lawsuit against Google after a bare-bones settlement. And then just days after the publisher's settlement, Judge Harold Baer delivered an emphatic summary judgment ruling in the Authors Guild versus HathiTrust. That was the AG's parallel case related to Google scanning. This involved a collection of university libraries. But that fair use ruling now hangs, you know, looms pretty large over the Authors Guild suit against Google. Although it should be noted that the Authors Guild has appealed Baer's ruling, and if that gets overturned, well, I'm not even going to try to unwind what that means for you in this short segment. But my second observation is that Judge Chin seems to be a little annoyed and seems to want to get this case over with, and really, who can blame him? The last round of briefs on the summary judgment motions is set for September 16th, and oral arguments on the summary judgment motions is now set for September 23rd. But before Labor Day, attorneys for the Authors Guild had asked for a two-week delay so one of its attorneys could attend a copyright conference. And the judge very bluntly denied the delay. And I think that's a signal that you can expect things to move very quickly from here on out. And finally, I'll just, you know, say a brief word about the arguments themselves. Maryland law professor and PW contributing editor James Grimmelman has a great piece up on the PW website today, noting that the AG's arguments, or the Authors Guild, I should say, are veering into what he calls Google derangement syndrome. And I'll just point out one of the more colorful arguments that the AG made in its brief, and that's that Google snippets are harmful because they transform Amazon book buyers into Google ad clickers. You can check out the story on PW to know what that's about, but you know, a few things strike me as odd about that. For one, it's odd to see the AG sort of defending Amazon here, which for the last few years has been the real bull in the author's China shop. And two, you know, Google doesn't display ads on the library books it scans unless the ads are turned on by the copyright owner. So, you know, there's a couple of things that are going to make for interesting oral arguments there. But as James Gimmelman points out in this excellent piece, the Authors Guild is claiming that Google is seeking an unfair advantage over its search rivals by scanning books without permission. And, you know, that's still kind of a little rich for Mr. Gimmelman to note that, you know, the AG is now, you know, it's claiming that they're getting this unfair advantage, but the AG supported that unfair advantage when it was drafting its settlement. So we'll see if that comes up too in these oral arguments. There's a lot to keep an eye on here.
Well, it's a terrific article. I've seen it, and I have to say that the notion of the Google derangement syndrome certainly brought a smile, although I don't think that's in the PDR just yet.
Probably not, no.
Probably not. Well, finally, it's back to school for just about everybody, and at PW too. So you've got a new column on a topic that we've begun paying attention to at Copyright Clearance Center and pretty much everybody else in publishing, and that's the Common Core.
That's right, and I know that you at CCC have been paying attention to this as well, and, you know, for anyone who's been paying attention to the rollout of the Common Core state standards, chances are you already know PW's newest monthly columnists, Margot Del Judas and Rose Luna. They were recently dubbed the Dynamic Duo by Library Journal, which honored them as 2013 Movers and Shakers, and they've been active members of ALA, and they're frequent presenters on the Common Core. They're both school libraries. They work in school libraries and in public libraries, and they're really, really up on this stuff. They are writing a monthly column for PW now called Cut to the Core, which helps us all make sense of the challenges and opportunities presented by these new educational standards. And they debut in Monday's issue. So I would urge you to check that out. And I welcome Margot and Rose to the PW team.
Well, that's right. And, you know, finally, I suppose we should close by noting the death last week of the great Irish poet and Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney. And your own Craig Teacher had a great remembrance on the PW site.
Yeah, he really did. And I would urge people to check it out. And, you know, we're still seeing so many tributes to Seamus Heaney showing up. It's obviously he had a major impact on the world of arts and letters, and his loss will certainly be felt. And I know also that he had an impact on a certain young reporter that I'm speaking to.
That's right. You know, I'll tell the story real quickly. In 1984, this freelance journalist with some misplaced literary ambition was trying to read as much of the contemporary Irish writing he could find, and he came across Seamus Heaney and saw Seamus Heaney read in Cambridge, and I somehow found a way to contact him. There were no cell phones those days, of course, and no email. I must have written to his publisher, but he spoke with me on a payphone at the end of a hall in a Harvard College dormitory where he lived half the year, and we arranged a time for a visit. So one fine spring afternoon, I brought over a six-pack of Guinness and a copy of his latest book, and we talked for much of that afternoon, and I suppose we drank one or two of those Guinness. he was very patient with me, and I left resolved to make my way one day to Ireland and to the North, which I did, and actually wrote a great deal about Ireland. And that cassette tape of our conversation is in the cellar still, and the article was published in the Boston Ledger, and I think they paid me $30 for it.
You know, I got to tell you, having a six-pack of Guinness with Seamus Heaney is a tremendous experience. I'm jealous.
Well, indeed. And, you know, he was talking at that time about a book then new, which was called Sweeney Astray, which is a translation. He was, of course, famous for his translation of Beowulf. But this particular book was an ancient Irish poem that had sort of been written and rewritten over many centuries. And he took a crack at it because he was attracted by the theme of the whole notion of the church taking over the Celtic order. And he explained to me, and this is something that has stuck with me ever since, a quote I'm reading from the article. He said that that Sweeney, the sacred king, united the druidic and legal functions, and he's displaced by the clerical order. It's a very old theme in Irish writing, Heaney said. Another emanation of it is probably the puritanism of the Irish character, the mixture of fire and ice, repression and lust. And as an Irishman, I understand only too well what he's talking about. Anyway, thanks for giving me the chance for a little bit of reminiscence. Andrew Albanese, senior writer of Publishers Weekly, we always enjoy having you here on Beyond the Book.
Well, thank you for that remembrance, and it's great, as always, to be here.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow Beyond the Book on Twitter like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at beyondthebook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burrist Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.